Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stenciled on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Look, it's very common in our league for certain events to take place and then, man, there's a reaction maybe in the offseason where we look at, you know, oftentimes we find our own flaws because of some loophole. I mean, if you look out throughout the history of our game, the forward fumble by the Raiders, there's been these events that at times potentially change rules. I can't say specifically, I like the fact that I'm a part of that committee and I know every offseason, the members of that committee, we all sit down and, I mean, really try to grind on, hey, how to make this game better, safer, and then present it to ownership and the other coaches. And so this year will be no different. Certainly there'll be topics like this that are brought up. The topic's one thing. The solution's the more challenging thing that we're all looking for.
This year may be different, though, as New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton may be finding out this week. Welcome to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos, as always. We're going to lead you up to 8 o'clock, and that's when Craig Perks will take over with Perks of the Game. And then following Perksy will be the return, the glorious return of the Dan Patrick Show. From 9 to 11. We got a good show lined up for you. We got a Louisiana wrap up as we'll crisscross the state. We'll touch on the retirement of Conor McGregor or the faux retirement of Conor McGregor or whatever's going to be setting up his appearance at WrestleMania, more than likely. We'll also preview Tulane at UL Baseball. And we got two excellent guests for you lined up today. David Berry from the Lake Charles American Press is going to help us preview the McNeese at LSU baseball game tonight, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game, 6 o'clock pregame, 6:30 first pitch. We'll also have Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast breaking down some of the free agent moves by the New Orleans Saints and comments made by Sean Payton and Gail Benson yesterday. And that's where I want to start off with. You heard the clip there about Sean Payton talking about how if there is a silver lining of the New Orleans Saints getting jobbed in the NFC Championship game by the officials, that it could prompt a massive rule change, that it could be for the betterment of the game, the shield. You know how Roger Goodell likes to talk about the shield a lot, the protection of the shield, the integrity of the shield. Well, we'll see if that actually happens.
Sierra Hotel, India, Echo, Lima, Delta, Shield.
The Saints coach renewed his criticism of the NFL yesterday, and more in particular how it handles the referees and the league's lack of action to improve its replay rules after, of course, the famous blown pass interference call in the NFC Championship game that cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl. He told the NFL Network yesterday during a sit-down interview at the league meetings, which are being held in Phoenix, that if nothing is done, then the owners are, quote, saying they're comfortable with what happened a year ago. So he's already throwing the gauntlet down here. He is front and center. Took some time out from taking that photo of all the coaches where Andy Reid is wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Freddie Kitchens looks homeless. And Jay Gruden, well, he looks like the less talented and creepier brother of John Gruden. They all take that ridiculous, you know, team photo of just all the coaches. Sean Payton, he has no time for all that mess. He'll go do that, but he ain't there enjoying cocktails in the terrific weather in Arizona. Okay, no, he's there to throw the gauntlet down. He said once again, saying they're comfortable with what happened a year ago. He's already laying the groundwork, putting this at the feet of the owners, saying, you must have been okay with us getting jobbed. You must be okay with us getting cheated out of a Super Bowl appearance. He's already laying the groundwork. Now, mind you, his owner is there well. Gail Benson, the queen, is there in Phoenix as well. So I don't know if this was a effort that they came up with before they got there. And she's like, Sean, you're going to go talk to the media and you're going to put them on blast. And I'm going to talk to the media as well. And we're going to try to put pressure on them. And, of course, we're talking about the play that'll never die, the Nickel Roby Coleman pass interference call that was not called. Now, Payton, as you heard there in the clip, and that was shortly after the season, Payton is a member of the league's competition committee. Said, quote, there are a handful of things that we've got to be better at right now. Our best at playing and our best at coaching are spending 20 hours, 18 hours a day. Our best at officiating, it's their second job. That has to change because it's too hard. There's too much at stake for someone who's a teacher at a school, who's a florist and an attorney. That's backward thinking. He's not wrong. I said it on this show after the NFC Championship game that the real problem that the NFL has is that they do not invest in the product on the field, and it has nothing to do with the teams or the marketing. It has to do with the officiating. They're using an old-fashioned, antiquated model with officiating. They're still using guys that aren't full-time officials to officiate the biggest games on the biggest stage. They're doing it the cheap way. They're doing it at a discounted rate because it's cheaper for them not to have to deal with officials. It's cheaper for them to deal with an official and hire an official to referee an NFC championship game that will go back home and be a florist or an attorney or a school teacher. This is a billion-dollar industry. You're telling me they don't have money that they can set aside to properly train their officiating crew, to hire people full-time, to make them have a good enough salary? Because here's the thing it always boils down to. And, Cody, you're a diehard Saints fan, so I want you to chime in here. If you pay people less money, historically speaking, whether it's in politics, business, whatever walk of life that you may be in, if someone is part-time or if someone is not paid properly, that tends to lend itself to corruption. It always has been that way from the Roman times till now. That's never changed. That is human nature. And people that are put in that kind of position are more susceptible to being corrupted. I'm not saying that the officials were on, you know, they got paid under the table for that game. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that as an industry, you're putting yourself in a position to damage the integrity of the game. Why not just step up and pay the officials? Why not do that? Why not make the game better for that? Cody, how do you feel about what Sean Payton had to say? And do you believe that's true, that we should have full-time officials working the NFL?
I mean, obviously, with Sean Payton, it's just worse in the sense because he had something specifically happen to him and his team, and then being on the committee and you know, one can only imagine how hard Sean Payton was trying to fight or whatever to get some sort of change implemented or at least begun. And apparently was continually kind of shut down. As far as, you know, full-time officials, take it a step back from what you said, even of it being able to breed corruption and things or whatever in an organization not being paid or people not making enough money or whatever. Not even that bad. Not paying someone what they are worth or what they feel they are worth or giving somebody enough value. Even if there's no corruption involved, you're absolutely breeding for minimal effort.
Correct. If you have a full-time job and you're an attorney or a school teacher, and that is a full-time gig, that's working overtime and not getting paid for it, okay? How much time are you really going to have to spend on your craft to be an excellent official?
Yeah. I mean, you're going to put in so much less effort than what I think is required of these NFL officials to be on the field and call the games with the most elite football players in the world. They need to be on a similar sort of level as far as officiating the game goes. And I mean, it's your part-time job and you don't think you're making enough money in a realistic claim. I mean, anybody can claim I'm not making enough money, but realistically, the NFL refs aren't being taken care enough of by the NFL to where, on any given game, whether it's the NFC Championship game or Week 6 Sunday at noon, they're putting in the same effort. I don't think they're not, you know, at least that could be the case. I don't want
to
speak for
the refs. Well, no, I mean, it's not, and not to say that there aren't officials that don't take it seriously and aren't dedicating all waking moment that they have to officiating. And maybe they're neglecting their other job to make sure that they do their job with the NFL right way.
They need to stop doing that because they're still doing their NFL job poorly. So focus on your
Correct.
Real job.
So why not make sure, if you're all about the integrity of the shield and the players on the field have to go through a rigorous training process, right? We go through rookie mini camp. We go through mini camp. We go through training camp. We go through preseason. Then there's regular season, practices during the regular season, off-season conditioning. The coaches, they go to coaches' clinic. They're constantly working. Most of these NFL coaches, the stories are legendary of them sleeping at the office, working on 2 to 3 hours of sleep because they're constantly working at their craft, preparing over and over and over again, trying to find every nuance that will help them get a W on Sunday. The marketing departments for the NFL and all 32 teams, they do the same thing. They're diligently working, going on social media, approaching how to do things, how to target women differently, how to target minorities. There's a lot of work going involved. There's a lot of money being invested in all these things. And the one thing that the NFL refuses to invest money into and to change their mindset is the thing that is determining the outcome of games. Why not change that? Why not change that? Why not change that? It's that simple. It's really not that hard. Payton said this. The idea that we're discussing it today and that we're having this impactful discussion today would get back to that group and says, hey, people don't want to tune into a car race with no bumps or crashes. Payton said, people don't want it to be finely tuned. Hey, I understand that line of thinking, Payton said, but we got to get that corrected. The big errors like that, especially in 2019. That's right. It's 2019. Can we have full-time officials and make this billion-dollar industry even better? That way you take away any or whatsoever, any speculation of corruption from the officiating. Doesn't that help the product that you're selling to the American public? Seems a pretty straightforward, easy decision to me. But what do I know? I'm just RP3. This is the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We led off the show about Sean Payton going on the blitz there with the media during the NFL meetings in Phoenix. He talked to the NFL Network about, you know, it's time for them to get to 2019 with their way of thinking when it comes to officiating, make sure that we have full-time officials and the integrity of the officiating process. Gail Benson's also there in Scottsdale, Arizona / Phoenix for the meetings, and she came out with a strong message on Monday. A strong message for anyone who thinks that the New Orleans Pelicans are a candidate to be sold or relocated possibly to Seattle. Quote, this is from Gail, "There's no way that I'm going to sell that team ever." That's pretty definitive. That's the end quote. That's what Gail Benson said during a press luncheon with local reporters at the NFL owners' annual spring meeting. The Saints and Pelicans owner was adamant that neither of the clubs are for sale and won't be as long as she is the owner. She went on to further say, quote, "I value the Pelicans as much as I do the Saints, and I don't look at myself as an owner of the teams. I feel like it is an asset that I am protecting for the city." She also went on to say, and we know that Gail assumed sole ownership of the teams when her husband, a longtime Saints owner, Tom Benson, died last year in March. She went on to further say, quote, "People are going to talk, and there's really nothing you can do about that." She said of the speculation that the Pelicans are a candidate for sale or relocation, "Time will take care of it. They'll see that I'm sincere and I'm not going anywhere. I've said this before. The Anthony Davis trade request is probably the best thing that could happen to the Pels. And I know at first everyone's reaction was, oh my God, Anthony Davis, he's demanding a trade. This is terrible. If Anthony Davis hadn't demanded the trade and it wouldn't have caused a disruption for the team, Dale Demps would still be in charge. And I give credit to Gail Benson now publicly stating that she is committed, and I do believe her when she says that she is in fact committed to building a winner and building a championship culture there with the New Orleans Pelicans. But I also believe that Gail, and as well as Mickey Loomis, just naturally were more invested with the New Orleans Saints. It's easy to see why. The Saints brought them a Super Bowl. The Saints are always in the mix, or usually in the mix, in contention to win a Super Bowl. The Saints are the lifeblood of the city of New Orleans when it comes to sports. The Pelicans are very much an afterthought. And it's always been that way, even before when they were the Hornets, or even a generation ago when the Jazz were there before they moved to Utah. Hoops has always been kind of an afterthought in the Crescent City and in the state of Louisiana compared to the Saints and compared to football. The public dysfunction, or the dysfunction that was made public with this whole entire situation, is now going to force Gail Benson, it forced Gail Benson and Mickey Loomis to fire Dale Demps, who was one of the worst and most incompetent front office people in the NBA. They're going to hire an actual director of basketball operations. They're going to hire an actual GM and just not have Mickey Loomis do it in addition of his responsibilities as the general manager of the New Orleans Saints. They're going to have basketball people in there. They're going to make wise decisions and not trade for guys and give up first-round draft picks and then turn around a year later and trade them away for a second-round draft pick. They're not going to give ridiculous contracts. They're going to be committed now because Gail Benson is a boss in every sense of the word. And she is angry, and she has been embarrassed by the Pelican situation. This is a prideful individual who takes immense pride of herself and her husband being committed to the New Orleans community. So this is the best thing that could happen, is Anthony Davis had demanded that trade, because it set forth in motion the firing of Dale Demps and now Gail Benson and Mickey Loomis being truly committed, 110% committed, to building something great in New Orleans with the Pels. They will make the right hire for the director of basketball operations and general manager. That person will in turn trade Anthony Davis and get the best possible assets possible for his services to try to set up this team to become a winner and develop a winning culture moving forward. Gail Benson also said during the talks yesterday there in Arizona that Mickey Loomis is going to be back to just being the general manager of the football team. This is according to Jeff Duncan and the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Benson said that she was going to hire a new GM for the NBA Pelicans and that Loomis would focus exclusively on football moving forward. That's the correct move. That has been an issue with her basketball team's biggest star, as around the time of center Anthony Davis' trade request, those around Davis were concerned that the NBA team wasn't as much of a priority as the Saints were to Benson. Whether or not that's true, the perception with your biggest star, your franchise player, is that the ownership group and the front office people cared more about the other team than they did the team that he played for, so why in the hell should he stick around? Whether or not that was true, whether or not that's the actual reality of the situation, the perception to the franchise superstar was that was in fact the case. So, going to hire an actual general manager to run her NBA team. So, good positive things coming out of Arizona. Sean Payton putting the NFL on blast once again, which, of course, we love. Trying to force some time, some changes with the officiating. Gail Benson saying that she's committed to running, keeping the New Orleans Pelicans in the Crescent City and actually having basketball folks run it. So, good news across the board coming concerning our New Orleans sports teams out of Arizona. When we come back, it'll be time for Louisiana wrap-up right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
There's an echo in here on Rap Game with RP3, coming at you live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we've got our first Louisiana wrap-up of the week coming at you. And we're going to start over in the capital city. We'll start on a low note, maybe, and try to build our way up. So let's start over in Baton Rouge. Ray, what you got?
The LSU baseball team, Cody, they dropped 2 of 3 over the weekend at Georgia. Now Georgia's a top 10 ranked team. And that shouldn't have affected them too badly in the polls, but it did. Surprisingly, they plummeted in the major collegiate baseball polls. The Paul Mainieri's bunch dropped from down to 16 in the Perfect Game poll, 17 in Baseball America, 17 in the D1 baseball poll, and number 12 in the college baseball poll. They went from being in the top 10 to barely being in the top 20. All from losing, dropping 2 games to a top 10 team in Georgia. Surprising that that occurred, but LSU will try to get back on track tonight when they host McNeese State. Pregame, 6 o'clock, 6:30. First pitch, you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. But then they have to go on the road and play at Mississippi State, who's ranked as high as 2 in some of those polls. So it's not going to get any easier for the Tigers, but if they go on the road to Stark Vegas and take 2 of 3, then they're going to just rise right back up in those polls. That's how this works. But surprising how far the LSU baseball team fell.
You're surprised. I don't know if I'm surprised by that. I don't.
That far though to a top 10 team. It's not like they lost to an unranked ball club.
But what direction has the team been trending since the start of the season?
Good
so
point.
I don't know. But
good point.
And rankings be damned. To be honest with you, I really don't care about the rankings. You make the regional and you go from there. It's college baseball. But yes, LSU baseball on the slide. Hopefully they can turn things around starting this weekend. Because again, who cares if they win tonight? Win or lose tonight, it really doesn't.
Midweek game's really not going to help them in the rankings or anything like that.
It's a confidence thing maybe for Mecole Hilliard on the mound, but
yeah. Well, the young pitchers that they're trying to get back on track.
Pitching hasn't been the problem though, right?
Well, the arm soreness has been a problem, but yeah, but the hitting has been a bigger right. issue, as we found out in Georgia.
All right, Ray, now let's make a little stop here outside of Louisiana, but definitely going to talk a guy with Louisiana ties. Is it Rio Grande, Rio Grande, Rio Grande, Rio Grande?
I always say Rio Grande.
Rio Grande. There we go. The E is silent.
Yes, we're going to head out there because Texas Southern men's basketball team picked up another comeback win there in the CIT, the College Insider Tournament. They went on the road and defeated Texas Rio Grande Valley 94-85. It's the second win in the CIT for the Texas Southern Tigers, led by LSU former LSU star player and LSU head men's basketball coach Johnny Jones. The 23 wins now ties the school record for most wins in a season in Texas Southern history. So congratulations to Johnny Jones for continuing to make moves, to make waves there with the Texas Southern men's basketball team. 23 wins ties the school record, and they're moving on in the CIT. They got more games to play, more postseason basketball for them. So congrats to a former LSU Tiger and Johnny Jones for getting that, picking up that win last night.
There you go. You can only win the games that you play. At least that's what they say. We forgot something in Baton Rouge, Ray. I apologize. We need to make a quick U-turn. A little round trip, if you will. And let's go back to the capital city. Not baseball this time, though, right?
That's right. Yesterday, and we did not do our due diligence yesterday, so that's our bad. But yesterday, the NCAA regionals for gymnastics was set, and LSU, that's right, national powerhouse, SEC champions. You know, they went down to the Superdome and won the SEC championship over the weekend. Well, they will serve as a host for one of the gymnastics regionals. The Baton Rouge regional has been set. Utah, Minnesota, BYU, Arkansas will be in session one, while session two next week will be LSU, Auburn, Arizona, and a play-in winner as well. Top two teams advance to the NCAA Nationals, where LSU has finished as runner-up a couple times the last few years. So congratulations to DD Bro and her squad for not only winning the SEC championship, but also going to be hosting an NCAA regional. And hopefully they will march on starting next week and reach the Nationals and bring home that elusive national championship, which has eluded them, Cody.
That is your three-time in a row SEC champion LSU Tigers.
Oh, nice.
Just for a little emphasis there, back to back. To back.
My man bringing the gymnastics knowledge.
They're working on the Tom Amansky status there at LSU Gymnastics. Back-to-back-to-back national champions. Well, not quite national champions, but shout out to LSU Gymnastics. And I will say, I have seen a thing in the recent years, LSU Gymnastics home events at the PMAC. They sell out the PMAC almost every time they have a home
meet. Dude, it's crazy there for that.
The regionals that LSU has hosted at the PMAC in the recent years have sold and have had worse attendance than just a regular season meet that LSU would have at home. So there's a big put. Well, it's because it's LSU and the peons, or as Mr. G or G would say, the little sisters of the poor. So it's one of those. I think everyone's like, okay, we'll take a weekend here because LSU is going to crush these other smaller schools, but they are pushing hard, the Tigers are, to try to pack the PMAC one more time this season for LSU Gymnastics in this regional. So we'll see if they can pull it off. I just thought it was crazy that a regular season meet brings more people to the LSU. Now, granted, they could be playing a Florida or somebody else
Alabama, who has an
incredible gymnastics program. I get it, but still, it's postseason, you know, gymnastics. I don't know what a cool term to say is for that, but get your butt to the PMAC. One more stop to make, Ray, on this Louisiana wrap-up today, and it's all the way down south. We going to the Crescent City to New Orleans. What you got?
Tulane over the weekend on Sunday, and then they had a press conference yesterday, but Tulane has hired someone to run their men's basketball program. You know, they were one of the worst in the country this year. The program is kind of, you just to say, it's just in shambles.
Would you say that I will? I could possibly fall out of my chair when you say who the coach is going to be? I don't know. Who is the coach?
Tulane has hired Georgia State's, Raging Cajun fans should know him, Ron Hunter, as its new men's basketball coach. The 54-year-old Hunter, who became a household name when his son made a shot in a conference tournament game, in the Sun Belt Conference tournament, and fell off his chair and hurt himself. Had to be in a cast or a walking boot after that. Hunter will be formally introduced today at noon at a news conference. This is what he did at Georgia State. He led that team to the NCAA tournament the past 2 years in three of the past five after taking over the Atlanta Commuter College in 2011-12. The Panthers lost to Houston 84-55 in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Georgia State's been kind of the cream of the crop there in the Sun Belt Conference, being a thorn in the side. I mean, Cody, has there been a better program, men's basketball program, than Georgia State since Hunter took over?
I mean, they have, at the very least, had UL's number, it seems. I was at that conference tournament where R.J. Hunter was just going. It seemed like he couldn't miss. You know, he was on a boat in the middle of the ocean and with a basketball, and points was get the ball wet. And that seemed like that's all he had to do.
Yes. So Hunter comes in after, you know, being able to take Georgia State out of the Sun Belt to the NCAA tournament three times in 5 years. He'll be tasked with trying to rebuild a Tulane program that under Mike Dunleavy, in 3 years, they had two seasons with the most losses in school history. So it's going to be a tough, tough task for sure. It's going to be probably harder for him to win at Tulane than it did at Georgia State, where he went 171-95. And by the way, before he got to Georgia State, Hunter, Georgia State had only played in the NCAA tournament twice before he arrived and won 20 games in a season only three times. He won at least 20 games at Georgia State, seven of his 8 years. So you're getting a quality veteran coach who knows how to win. He was able to recruit at Georgia State. He's going to come to Tulane. Now, I know Tulane has its challenges because it's a small private school. That's going to, you know, with academic standards, he's going to have challenges in front of him. But this is a terrific hire where you're able to poach a guy who's coaching a team that just wrapped up getting to the NCAA tournament. So if you're Tulane, bravo to them, and wish best of luck there to Ron Hunter. And I know Raging Cajun fans will wish him luck and are thankful that he's no longer going to be coaching Georgia State because they've been a big roadblock for the Raging Cajuns on the hardwood. That's going to do it for the Louisiana wrap-up. When we come back, is Conor McGregor really retiring? I don't know. We'll find out right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We led off this hour talking about Sean Payton continuing his full court press on the NFL to change how it deals with officiating. We touched on Gail Benson pledging that the New Orleans Pelicans are staying right there in New Orleans, and that she's committed to building a winner. And then we did a Louisiana wrap-up as we crisscrossed the state, talking about everything from LSU baseball to Tulane basketball and even some LSU gymnastics. And our boy Cody Schutz went next level on the gymnastics talk. That was unexpected and delightful all at the same time. But we need to wrap up the first hour about the retirement announcement that took place last night on the social medias. Conor McGregor Mr. Headline Grabber himself. Mr. Throwing Dollies Through Buses. A hooligan.
There's a barricade involved as well.
There was a barricade involved as well. He is definitely the biggest star in the UFC. He's the biggest brand name guy they have. Well, he just tweeted out last night his retirement. Quote, "Hey guys, quick announcement. I've decided to retire from the sport formerly known as mixed martial art today." I don't understand why mixed martial art is in quotes.
Why is the sport itself formerly known as?
Why?
What do we call it now?
Do we no longer call it MMA? Did I miss that?
I think you had a little too much Proper 12 before putting this tweet out.
I was not on that email list. About that. I wish all my old colleagues well going forward in competition. I now join my former partners on this venture already in retirement. Proper pina coladas on me, fellas.
That sounds gross. I don't want an Irish whiskey pina colada. No. Proper pina. Ugh.
So the UFC has lost its biggest star. I don't know, though. I mean, about this retirement, I have a hard time buying it because hasn't he retired before, Cody? Right?
I feel like yes, that's a thing.
He's retired before, and Dana White says they asked Dana White about it. Says if he were him, I would retire too. Oh yeah, okay. Here's during an appearance. I was right about the talk show. During an appearance on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon on Monday.
So a big talk show, too.
The former two-time division UFC champion McGregor said he was negotiating a July fight. And that would be big news because it would be his first fight since a submission loss to lightweight champion. I'm not even going to try. Is there a nickname for the guy that he lost to, Cody? Can you help me out here?
Oh, Nurmagomedov is how you pronounce it. Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Khabib. There we go.
I can't remember his name. He's like the Russian assassin or something. But Khabib.
The Russian bear or something.
I can't remember exactly what it is.
So, after he lost to Khabib back in October 6th in Vegas.
Yeah, and then Khabib jumped the octagon, beat up his trainer in the crowd. That made me so mad. You're triggering me right now.
So, he's on The Tonight Show. Then, at 10:18 Pacific time on Monday, a little more than 5 hours after the taping of The Tonight Show, McGregor tweeted out that he was retiring. So, is this Jimmy Fallon's fault?
Nah.
Did something happen? Was there not the proper amount of green M&Ms in the green room for Conor McGregor when he went on to The Tonight Show? I have questions. Why did all of a sudden he's there hanging out with Jimmy Fallon, who can't stop laughing during any interview? And then a few hours later, he's like, "Hey, man, quick announcement. The sport formerly known as mixed martial art, it's arts, first of all, art, I'm going to retire from."
I'm just going to throw this out there. I don't know what's what, but just saying he's Conor McGregor. It's been a while. Since he's done anything of note. Proper 12 is actually doing better than I think a lot of people expected it to. It's moving on, as you see, commercials now. It's selling well. Conor McGregor hadn't really been talked about a lot lately. It's kind of been on the back
burner. Except for being arrested a couple weeks back.
But I think maybe this is just a ploy of his. It's all marketing. It's all a work, as they say in the biz. It's him going on Fallon, so now he's gotten pub like, oh, he was saying he's trying to work on a fight. Oh, man, now there's a little buzz for Conor McGregor. All of a sudden now he tweets out, "No, you know what, I think I'm going to retire," and he is getting spoken about on countless morning sports radio shows across the country this morning. Well done, Conor McGregor.
Which helps his whiskey brand.
Exactly. It's just a thought.
He's
smart. He is not a stupid individual. Conor McGregor.
And I've also said this. What is his desire to still be a fighter and to win now? He's got a kid, and he got that huge payday for boxing Mayweather.
Right.
What, Like, here's, you know, that's the
WWE
thing.
WWE will pay him if he decides to go that route. They would pay him. Now, that's up to him.
That's up to him, but he got his big, massive payday. He doesn't have to work ever again unless he's living like Rocky did in, like, Rocky IV, and then he ends up being in Rocky V, where he's basically homeless because he spent too much money buying robots. So,
happy birthday, Pauly.
Happy birthday. Yes, thank you. Thank you. So terrible. You know, so, but he got his big paycheck. He's the most famous guy. Can you argue that Connor's the most famous fighter in UFC history?
I could. Chuck Liddell.
You still think Chuck is more famous?
They're both as recognizable as the other, I think.
And Chuck was on Entourage, so big up to him.
But I mean, modern UFC, as we know it today, Conor McGregor, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he's already got the fame. He's already a legend, a two-division champion. He got the huge payday for fighting Mayweather. He's got his whiskey line. What does – I mean, that's the thing. Like that's the thing about the modern athlete, right? You have the drive. You come from a poor background. You come from nothing. You want to become a champion. That drives you. You put on all the work. Well, once you get to a certain point, you become comfortable. You have money in the bank. You don't have to fight for a living anymore. You don't have to scrap. You know what I'm saying? It's a switch, and it happens to fighters. It happens to boxers. It happens to MMA guys. It happens to football players, too. So it happens to all of them. So I'll ask you this, Cody. Do you think he's really retired, or do you think this is a publicity ruse? Because as soon as he tweeted it out, people were sending him direct messages, see you at WrestleMania, bro.
Yeah. Is he retired? For now, yeah. I don't think we probably won't see Conor McGregor fight anytime soon in UFC. Maybe in another few years he has one of these, you know, farewell fight type things against another old guy at the time where they, you know, bop each other around a little bit. If you're going to see Conor McGregor in any type of combat sport, if you will, I would say it's going to be professional wrestling.
I mean, I would agree with
that's
that.
Where Ronda Rousey is now. And, I mean, we saw yesterday it was announced Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch are going to close headline. The final match at WrestleMania is going
first
to be
time.
A women's match for the first time in 35 WrestleManias. So,
well, that's the most buzzed about match.
Right. But
already,
I'm saying,
so it makes sense that.
But Conor McGregor, maybe he takes a peek over and sees what Ronda's doing. Oh, look how popular she is. She's headlining shows again. I would like to do that and not actually get punched in the face.
And not actually get punched in the face.
So
that's a huge upside.
That's an upside.
That's an upside for me.
And don't act like WWE wouldn't treat Conor McGregor like a stud. He would never lose. He'd be, Ronda's lost one match since she's been there a full year, and it was a tag team match, and she didn't get pinned. Just saying.
That's going to do it for the first hour of the Rap Game with RP3. We'll throw it up on the Twitter. Do you think Conor McGregor is really retired from UFC? We'll throw that out on there. You can go vote. Up next, we're going to get a McNeese State at LSU baseball preview from our good friend David Berry from the Lake Charles American Press right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We talked New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton trying to push changes when it comes to NFL officiating. We also talked Gail Benson pledging her commitment to the Pels to remain in New Orleans and the fact that they're going to hire an actual basketball general manager. We had a Louisiana wrap-up, and then we touched on, is Conor McGregor really retiring, or is it just a publicity stunt for him to make a surprise visit at WrestleMania. But we're going to start off the second hour talking about LSU baseball. Pre-game show is tonight, 6 o'clock, right here on 103.7 The Game. First pitch, 6:30, as LSU coming off a series loss at Georgia, which saw them fall down the top 25 polls, went from a top 10 team all the way down to a team barely in the top 20. It's going to try to get things back on track against the Cowboys of McNeese State. And giving us some insight on what McNeese is going to bring to Alex Box Stadium tonight is our good friend from the Lake Charles American Press who covers the Cowpokes, the one and only David Berry. David, how are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm not used to being up this early. I'm not going to lie to you, but otherwise I'm very good. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Look, we appreciate you making the time out. Just kind of want to get some perspective on McNeese State, what they're going to be bringing to the table tonight when they go into Alex Box Stadium. You know, LSU, you know, head coach Paul Menieri says it wasn't really a struggle with the lineup. It was more about the terrific pitching that Georgia has, and that's why they're a top 10 team. Is McNeese going to have anyone take the bump that's even remotely on the same level as anyone Georgia threw out there, David?
You know, I'm not sure. Yesterday during the weekly press conference, McNeese head coach Justin Hill, he didn't confirm who's going to start. But even without that, I feel pretty confident saying that it won't be somebody up at that level for a few reasons. I mean, one, you just look at the depth of an SEC staff, and it's hard to imagine McNeese being able to match that, one. And two, to disparage LSU in any way, but they're not going to want to throw one of their big arms today when McNeese has to go to Sam Houston State, who's tied at the top of the Southland Conference this weekend. So it's a huge series for McNeese coming up on the weekend. They're already kind of down towards the bottom of the conference, and they really can't afford to go further behind. So I don't think they're going to see one of the quality arms. I think it's probably going to be one of those Johnny Holstaff things. And I think they're just going to try to hope that they don't get LSU doesn't kind of jump out on them too quickly. But yeah, I just honestly, looking at it, I just can't realistically see any arms that they throw tonight being anything like what a Georgia starter would be.
We're on with David Berry, the Lake Charles American Press. He covers McNeese State. He's helping us give us a preview of tonight's baseball game at Alex Box Stadium versus LSU. David, you know, McNeese has played LSU each of the last 12 years at least once. They even had a home-and-home with the Tigers back in 2012. Now, of course, LSU has dominated this series, won 11-13, and holds an overall 30-11 lead in the all-time series. But the Cowboys did beat the Tigers back in 2017. At Joe Miller Ballpark over there in Lake Charles by the score of 5-4. At that time, LSU was ranked number 6 in the country. But this McNeese State team is nowhere near as good as that 2017 team, is it?
No. The thing about this team is they can never really seem to get, like, it can't really seem to get on the same page. And what I mean by that is they may have a game where they bust out for about 10, 11, 12 runs, but the pitching staff will give up 13 or 14. Or the pitching staff may come in and give up 3-4 runs, but the offense that day will have, score 2 or 3. This past weekend against Incarnate Word, it was more the case of the pitching was decent. I wouldn't say it was great. It was decent, but the offense just struggled. The last two games of the series, they left a combined 18 runners on base. They left the bases loaded or with two runners on numerous times. One time I can really think of that was it was telling of the series was Shane Salmon. He got drafted last year by the Boston Red Sox, came back. He's the guy you want to see at the plate with the bases loaded, and he came up. I forget what inning it was, but it was a chance for I mean, it could have been a huge at bat, and the first pitch of the series, or the first pitch of the at bat, he turns on a pitch and just crushes it, but it goes foul past the left field foul pole. And then a couple pitches later, he just kind of weakly pops out to second base. So you know, you leave, and that ended the inning, and that ended the threat. So, yeah, right now, I think this McNeese team, they can explode. If they did win tonight, it wouldn't be like the hugest shock ever. But, yeah, they would definitely have to have both some solid hitting and solid pitching. And right now, I don't know if they're going to be able to get both at the same time.
David, let's talk a little bit about midweek contests in general. I know the bigger programs like an LSU or even like a UL, you know, for a lot of folks, they kind of just the midweek game is a necessary evil. It doesn't really mean that much. What's more important is winning those weekend series. So if, you know, when LSU drops a game to Northwestern State, it doesn't mean that much because they're going to be focused on, you know, beating Kentucky that weekend or whoever the opponent may be. Is that the same mentality that a team from the Southland Conference has, or do they view the midweek games differently?
I think it's a mixed bag because, you know, just because a team like McNeese or teams in the lower conferences, yeah, they may not have the same cachet, you know, be ranked as high. But we have to think about it. A team like LSU, they can kind of go into weekend series already knowing that they're going to the NCAA tournament, right? As long as they don't totally implode, they're going to the NCAA tournament, and there's a decent chance they'll be able to host a regional if they kind of trend above water, right? But you're talking about a team, the teams in the like McNeese, teams in the Southland. I mean, they're fighting. There may be one bid from the Southland, maybe two, but it's you're really fighting. So a win like LSU, it would really help the resume. But even the Cowboys, like I said, they're looking forward to this weekend as well. Like getting a win tonight would be good, but you even got a glimpse from what Justin Hill said yesterday. He did say, and he mentioned, he was like, you know, the result isn't the most important thing. We want to go out and compete against LSU. And that gives that to me, that gave a little bit of an insight as to their mindset is, you know, like we're going out there to win, you know, I don't get it twisted or anything. They're not going to go out there and just kind of throw whoever. But like I said, they really, 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 really need at the very worst two wins out of three this weekend. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, the mentality of a team, of an LSU is, or I don't know the exact mentality, but the mentality of an LSU, they're going to the tournament. I mean, like, it's kind of already been established pretty early on. I mean, McNeese team, they really need these wins. So I think they're kind of going to treat those conference games with a little bit more reverence as well.
We're on with David Berry of the Lake Charles American Press. He covers the McNeese State Cowboys for that publication. David, that being said, and it sounds like you kind of like they're taking the same mentality where, yeah, it's great. It's going to be a great environment, and their guys can get some playing time in a great venue like Alex Box Stadium, but they're more focused about the weekend and winning the Southland because that's how they get into the, you know, they get into an NCAA regional. So it sounds like they both kind of have the same mentality, and they're more focused on their conference series. That said, what needs to happen tonight when first pitch occurs at 6:30 there inside of the box for McNeese to pull off the upset and to beat LSU, similar to what Northwestern State was able to do a couple weeks ago?
Well, I really think they're going to have to jump out early. They have to jump out early. Like I said, this McNeese team, they have the capability of putting up 4, 5, 6 runs in an inning. And I know that LSU, they're starting Mikhail Hilliard. I know he was a weekend starter last year. I'm not sure what's happened this year. But, yes, you really got to jump out. They have to jump out early. They have to jump out early because it'll kind of force LSU's hand as far as you really see what they plan on doing, right? Because I think LSU's plan in their heads, they may not ever say it publicly. Their plan is, all right, we jump out early, we can kind of cruise, because I heard that LSU plans on kind of going with the Johnny Holt staff approach as well with multiple arms. So I think you got to jump on them early and really say, make them say, all right, well, this is what we have to do. The pitching will probably have to have one of its better games of the season. The problem with McNeese is they just tend to issue a lot of walks, and they have a lot of high stress innings, you know, and it's very quick. So you'll be kind of looking down. You might look at your computer and you look up and, you know, it's two batters into the game and they've already walked two. So they've got, you know, it's runners on first and second, no outs. And you're like, wow, you know, you already kind of have to get out of a little bit of a jam, or, you know, they'll have a ground out and runners go to second and third, one out, you know. So the pitching really has to kind of lock that down, clean up, can't issue too many walks. Fielding, not too worried about with me. They're pretty clean in the field. But, yeah, I'd say the offense has to jump out early, get some runs, kind of force LSU's hand. Pitching definitely got to, you know, not walk too many batters. Don't let the atmosphere get the best of them, and kind of hold LSU at bay for the rest of the game.
Well, David, I appreciate you waking up earlier than normal for us there, my good brother. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy being in the box tonight for the game with McNeese at LSU, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
No problem. Thanks, as always, for having me on. Have a great day.
It's David Berry from the Lake Charles American Press, giving us a little bit of a preview of tonight's McNeese at LSU baseball game. Once again, you can listen to that live at 6 o'clock pregame right here on 103.7 The Game, first pitch at 6:30. But before you listen to LSU, join the good brother Ben Love in Bumper to Bumper Sports today from 4 to 6, live from the T-Mobile at the I-49 Frontage Road and Saunier Road, and see for yourself why T-Mobile has the happiest customers in wireless. Customers get discounts and gifts every Tuesday. See you there today. When we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, we're going to preview another big midweek baseball game. Tulane comes to town here in Lafayette, taking on the Raging Cajuns. We'll talk more about that right after this here on 103.7 The Game.
Well, I don't think that it's more important than any other midweek game or any other game is, but, you know, it's our next game, and we do have a sour taste in our mouth right now for how yesterday ended. So, yes, we want to get back out there as soon as possible. You know, I really wish it was this afternoon, but we've got to wait till tomorrow. So, you know, I think our guys will be ready to get, you know, victory, that victory taste back in their mouth. And it was really tough yesterday because, you know, you go from potentially winning the series, you know, going 4-2 in conference, to within a matter of 5-10 minutes, you know, you're on the bad end of that game, so very tough.
UL assistant baseball coach Anthony Babineau there talking about how the Raging Cajun baseball team is ready to put behind them and just an awful weekend of dropping the series to a very bad Appalachian State team. The Cajuns will try to do that tonight there at the Teague, when they welcome in Tulane, old in-state rival. They'll welcome them in there. They're at Russo Park. First pitch for this midweek clash is going to be set for 6:30. Now, the two programs met less than a week ago down in New Orleans. Tulane won that game 7-3. UL is 11-14 overall in the season, 3-3 in conference play. Starting pitcher remains to be announced. Tulane, meanwhile, is 17-7 on the year. And they're winners of five straight, including a three-game sweep of Houston Baptist over the weekend. Houston Baptist plays in the Southland Conference with McNeese and Northwestern State.
I got tripped up for a second. I thought you said for a second, my head went to Dallas Baptist. they're a very good small program, but Houston is a little different.
They got a heck of a hitter. They got a couple of really good hitters, Tulane does. Frankie Niemann, he leads the Green Wave with a .417 batting average. Cody Jose has started in all 24 games, and he boasts he has a pedestrian .392 average with 11 home runs. So Tulane's going to be bringing their bats to town. Krishnan Raj, he's going to get the start for the Green Wave. He enters the contest. His ERA is a little high, 3.57, but he's 2-0 on the season. So a little bit of a power pitcher. Now, you know, UL leads the all-time series 49-45, and the Cajuns are 17-19 under head coach Tony Robichaux versus Tulane. UL has won 6 of the last 10 meetings between the two schools, including the last meeting right here in Lafayette. That game, the Cajuns won 8-6. It'll be interesting to see if they can get that bad taste out of their mouth. And look, the bats have come alive for the Raging Cajuns. Hayden Cantrell, the former Turlings Catholic star, he makes terrific plays with his glove, but his bat has been just monstrous. He's on a tear. He has the 13-game hitting streak, which he's currently riding heading into this game. He's coming off a week where this is what he did last week. Now, I know they lost the midweek, you know, they lost their games and they lost the series to App State, but it wasn't because of Hayden Cantrell. He batted .500, had 3 home runs, 2 doubles, a triple, and 7 RBIs. That's a heck of a week. Okay. That's a heck of a week. He also just became the 4th player to hit for the cycle in team history against Northwestern State last week. But he's not the only local product that's tearing it up for the Raging Cajuns. Brennan Breaux, former STM Cougar, state champion. He started his career off at LSU, transferred in. He's been having himself a heck of a season after seeing limited playing time last year in his first year of eligibility after the NCAA transfer due to the NCAA transfer policy. He's been a pleasant surprise for the Raging Cajuns. He's batting .302 on the year with 15 runs batted in. Todd Lott and Oren Vejon have come on as late as well. The problem for the Raging Cajuns is you're not going to be surprised if they take down Tulane tonight there at the Teague. It's just they have yet to put together a consistent effort. Right, that's what it boils down to for them, consistency. There are games where the hitting is top notch and they're knocking in runs and they're getting on base and they're getting all these extra base hits, and they build up a lead and then the bullpen just disintegrates. Then there's other games where they can't hit to save their lives. They even try to play small ball and they can't, and then the pitching's tremendous. They've yet to be able to put together 3 to 4 to 5 games worth of contest where they play consistent ball, where they're great at the plate and they're great on the mound and great in the bullpen. If they do that, they do have talented pieces to put together a run to possibly compete for the Sun Belt Conference Championship. But they have to be more consistent. And they have to be more disciplined and more consistent. And we talked about earlier how the midweek game really doesn't mean all that much. You'll hear most baseball folks, most college baseball folks will tell you, the midweek game is where you get guys a lot of reps. Guys get more playing time that typically aren't part of the weekend rotation, specifically with pitching. And then, you know, maybe your backups get some playing time. I agree with that. But if you're a team like the Raging Cajuns right now, a win against Tulane could help build confidence. And they need a bit of confidence after suffering that disappointing weekend series defeat at the hands of App State right there at the Teague. We'll talk more about the Raging Cajuns on tomorrow's show and see if they in fact did bounce back in a big way against the Green Wave. Friends, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor you hire is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. When we come back here after this break on the Rap Game with RP3, we're going to bring on our good friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's going to give us some updates and perspective on, is Jarrett Cook really signing with the New Orleans Saints? And his thoughts on what Sean Payton said yesterday at the owners' meetings. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time for us to head back out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast, our good friend Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning, my friend?
Doing well, Raymond. Thanks for having me on the show.
Doing great, man. I'm doing great. Let's get right to it, man. Look, the owners' meetings are out in Arizona. Sean Payton's already addressed the media. What were your thoughts of what Sean Payton had to say about the officiating and about the competition committee and everything like that?
Well, I mean, I think it was strong words. Basically, if something isn't done to change the rules as they stand, then owners are sending a clear message that that they're fine with what happened and that they it doesn't bother them. So I think it's pretty clear from Sean Payton's camp. You know, Dale Benson made some comments also, which were softer, and said that it may take time and that, you know, basically preaching patience. So, I think that those are two, maybe, Gail Benson's comments may be preparing us for the possibility that we won't see a rule change this offseason, and that, that's something that may take a few years. And Sean Payton may be sending strong language, also preparing us for the inevitable possibility that we won't see changes quite as soon as this offseason. So that's my take. And, obviously, if that's how it plays out, it's a disappointment, because I think when you see something that egregious after what the Saints went through and what the fan base went through with the ending of that Rams game, you'd like to see something more reactionary. You'd like to see action taken immediately. I felt the mistake was that egregious. And if we don't see that, I think it's a shame.
Andrew, what do you think Gail has to do, though, to persuade the other owners that change is needed? It's one thing for the head coach to be out there talking on the NFL Network about it, but it's another thing. Gail carries a little bit more weight than her coach does. So what do you think she's going to be trying to do during these meetings? Do you think she's going to try to lay the groundwork for change, but go ahead and say it's going to happen next year or the year after?
Well, I think the challenge, I think it's going to take time. Change is always difficult. You know, first of all, I think it's one thing to say that what happened isn't right and that things should be different. But then there's the whole proposal of what you would do differently and the whole implementation of it following that, which I think is more difficult. When you talk about something that's a judgment call, like a pass interference, would we all of a sudden turn around and make every single pass interference reviewable? Would we make every non-call reviewable? Would we make every call reviewable? I think, there's a slippery slope and a danger there that you could really look at almost any play and make the argument that a cornerback is making contact after 5 yards. And so then, that begs the question, can we review any play at any given moment and argue that pass interference happened? So
I think when you look specifically at the Saints and what happened to them, I mean, it's clear that a flag should have been thrown. It's clear that there was a huge mistake. Maybe the NFL admitted that on the phone with Sean Payton right after the game. But I still think it's what becomes more difficult is how you actually go about reviewing something like that, because I don't think you want to open the door to any and every contact down the field, even a small contact, potentially getting reviewed and being called pass interference. I think that would start to affect the enjoyment of the game and the entertainment factor for fans. So I think that's the biggest problem, and I think that's why it will take time. There will be more analysis needed, and I think a solid proposal will need to come that convinces the owners that it's better than what they have now.
Rome with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Andrew, why is the Jarrett Cook signing taking so damn long?
Well, that's a big question, and I don't know that anyone has a clear answer. I think one thing is maybe the Saints in the cap space. There are rumors that the Saints are maybe looking at 1 year, $8 million. So when you've got about $14 million in cap space, a one-year deal really eats up a lot of your cap room. The Saints are also poking around with Ziggy Ansah and Cameron Quinn. So when you look at what's available, or what they would potentially be interested in signing as players, there's a little bit of a Tetris or a jigsaw puzzle to kind of work through with the cap. So 1 year deals are very different from long-term deals. Long-term deals can be structured in a way that are very cap friendly in year one. And you can fit it pretty easily, in terms of your roster. 1 year contracts are more difficult, especially when you're up against the cap. So I think part of it is the Saints maybe trying to maneuver some things a little bit. What happens with Robert Quinn? I mean, if you look at, potential trade and then a signing after that, may limit what the Saints are able to do. So I don't think there's a huge rush, but I think when you look at, for example, Gronkowski retiring and, the Patriots becoming interested in Jared Cook, I think time is of essence. I don't think you want to introduce a layer where he all of a sudden becomes more interested in another possibility. Who knows down the road, injuries, things change with other rosters also. Someone else retiring, which would maybe open up some cap space. To me, it's puzzling. I've never really seen anything like it. And if I'm the Saints, I want to get that deal done as soon as possible.
Andrew, we talked a little bit about on last week's show about the importance of Drew Brees restructuring that contract. But they also got Cam Meredith to restructure his contract and take less money. Do you think, though, even with that, to free up room to get a Jarrett Cook or someone else, do you think the Saints are still going to target a wide receiver either in free agency or in the draft?
I do. I think they'll add a player. I don't think it's as critical of a need as some suggest. Obviously, you have Michael Thomas, and he's a fantastic player, and he's your number one receiver. After that, I think it starts to become a question. You've got a lot of possible answers. Ted Ginn showed some signs of aging and injury last season, and so he's still a good player, but, obviously I think he can be productive and have a good season, but you're not sure with his age how much he can give you. I still think Traquan Smith and Keith Kirkwood are young. They were rookies last year. I still think the sky's the limit for those two players, and I think they can continue to improve and be productive in this offense. Cam Meredith is coming back, obviously helps. Has been a big issue with him, but if he can get his knee right, he's still a player I think that has potential. So I think there's a lot of internal options on this roster that can work out, and I think the Saints are smart not to spend $8 to $10 million a year on an Adam Humphries or a Cole Beasley, because I think there is enough solutions on this roster that receiver can improve from within. Now, I think tight end is a big need. So, yes, Jared Cook is still a need, a must. And I think the Saints should seriously consider drafting a tight end on top of that. So that's going to be, I think, an area of emphasis. As far as receiver, we may see them draft a guy or maybe re-sign a guy like Dez Bryant, which would be a lower-level investment. But I don't really see the Saints making a big move at receiver, because I think they're hopeful that internally these guys will step up.
We're talking to Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Andrew, you know, you said, you know, wide receiver is probably going to be maybe something they address in the draft, or maybe with some type of mid-level free agent. Let me ask you this, continue on that point. If you had to pick, do you think both Dez Bryant and Cameron Meredith are on the roster for the first game of the season?
I don't think so, no. I think both players, there's a good chance both will be in camp. And, you know, you basically let it play out that way and you see how things shake out. But I think if you look at the Saints roster, Michael Thomas, obviously a lock. Ted Ginn, barring injury, I think is a lock. You know, Keith Kirkwood and Traquan Smith are two receivers they like a lot. And they have the arrow pointing up. They're healthy. So I think those are two guys that make their roster. And so then you're really talking about a fifth spot at receiver, and the Saints probably aren't keeping more than that. And that's going to be up to either a guy like Dez Bryant if he can recover from his injury, or maybe Cam Meredith if he can recover from his. But I think that fifth receiver spot, you know, Austin Carr, maybe he's another guy, or maybe a rookie. But I think it's going to be hard, you know, unless the player gets injured or, you know, Kirkwood or maybe Traquan Smith doesn't work out like we expect them to. But I think a lot would have to transpire for both of those players to be on the roster come opening day.
Is there a possibility that neither is on the roster?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think, obviously, first of all, Dez Bryant isn't even on the team right now, and he's recovering from a torn Achilles. So I think he's a long shot, honestly, to be on the Saints roster come opening day. I think he's not only going to have to sign with the Saints, but recover from his injury and show that he deserves a roster spot over Cam Meredith, over Ted Ginn, potentially. So I think it's a long road for him. As far as Cam Meredith is concerned, look, he basically took a $2 million pay cut this day. So I think at this point the Saints can get out of his contract and not really feel much in terms of cap ramification. So I think he's going to have to prove that he's healthy. And like I said, there's five spots and you feel like four are on pretty solid footing. So that doesn't leave Cam Meredith a bunch of room for error. So I think we'll see a good battle in camp with receiver. And as is usually the case in the Sean Payton offense, whether it's been Lance Moore, whether it's been Willie Snead, I mean, we've had players surprise in this offense and make the team. So you can't rule that out either.
Andrew, let's wrap it up with this. You talked a little bit about the draft. We know the Saints have minimal picks for this upcoming draft. They traded away their first rounder this year to get up to get Marcus Davenport. And then they gave up a third rounder to get Teddy Bridgewater from the Jets, and then got a fourth rounder to get Eli Apple. And all those things look like sound decisions, but they're going to be thin in the draft. They got a fifth, 2 sixths, and a seventh, and they have one guy. They'll be able to select one guy at number 62 overall there in the second round. So they really only have one. They have one pick in the first three rounds, or their first four rounds, rather, and then everything else is basically going to be camp guys. What do you think their priority is going to be with that number, that their lone pick in the first four rounds?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think this is a year where you're not really going to see the Saints make a huge impact in the draft. I would be, first of all, very surprised if the Saints leave this draft without burning 2020 draft pick assets. I mean, they already did that last year in an effort to move up to get Davenport and sacrifice their first-round pick, so I think it's one thing that's clear is that they will not get through this draft without burning a 2020 asset in an effort to maybe accrue extra picks. So I fully expect that. And listen, I think when you look at what they were able to acquire, moving up to get Davenport, trading for Teddy Bridgewater, trading for Eli Apple, those are all good pickups. Those are all important pickups. So I think you look at this 2019 draft and you look at the veterans that it afforded the Saints and what it was able to help them get, you look at it as a success. I think, you know, obviously most people would agree that Eli Apple is critical to the roster as the number two corner. Teddy Bridgewater is the backup, maybe the quarterback of the future for the team. And Davenport is a guy where I think he could be a 15-sack guy coming up soon. So
Those are huge acquisitions. Obviously, the second-round pick, they can't get that wrong. That's going to be very important to find a productive player at that spot. But otherwise, I think they'll find ways to trade to get back in this round. Like I said, giving up 2020 draft pick assets. And from there, I think, you know, the main thing is you've got a deep roster, so you don't have to add too much depth here. The Saints already feel good about where they stand. I think, you know, if you can hit on a pick or two, you feel pretty good about how this draft is.
Andrew, brother, appreciate you making some time for us as always. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
It sounds good. Thank you.
That was Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We will wrap up this edition of The Rap Game with RP3 after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Coming up will be Perks of the Game with Craig Perks, golf legend, even better broadcaster. He's in the house. I was out broadcasting live from the Chittimacha, Louisiana Open. I can't tell you how many times people came up to me and they saw that I was working. They're like, oh, do you know Craig? I was like, I've shook his hand a few times. I don't know him. Like, we haven't broke bread together. That's all they wanted. They could give a damn about me. They just wanted to know about Perks. That's all they wanted. They wanted to know about the Cajun Kiwi. So he'll be here doing his thing live here in a few moments for Perks of the Game. Cody, we threw up a Twitter poll question.
We did.
Tell me how it's doing. Tell the folks about the question again. What is the question, and how are the votes going? The
question is simply, do you think Conor McGregor's retirement announcement, is it legit, or is this a publicity stunt of some kind, a little marketing ploy maybe?
We both voted publicity stunt.
Absolutely. And publicity stunt, it still counts if you're saying this is just his clever way of getting into WWE. That's still a publicity stunt. It all falls under the same. Okay. But we have right now a landslide. I don't want to call it a victory, but it will be a victory. 81% say a publicity stunt. So
How many votes already?
Total 26 votes. And only been up for under an hour.
I can't wait to see what those final numbers are. It's going to be closer to 90%.
I got a feeling. I mean, personally, I don't want this to be the end of Conor. Do I need to see Conor McGregor?
He's not going to go out doing a spot on Jimmy Fallon and then deciding to retire. That's what I'm saying.
You know, now maybe a couple of years before we see Conor do anything or something. Who knows? Does Conor pop up in Bellator? That would probably be the craziest thing to happen. I don't expect that. But, I mean, this is not the last we'll see of Conor McGregor in some sort of combat sport, I predict.
I agree with you. A little breaking news to give to the listeners from Major League Baseball. Ken Rosenthal is reporting that Jacob DeGrom, the star pitcher for the New York Mets, has agreed to a new 5-year deal worth $137.5 million.
That's why you cut your hair right there for a deal like that. That's why you cut your hair.
Cut your hair for a deal like that.
Nobody's getting you've heard Tesla signs. Nobody's cutting a deal for a guy with long hair that big.
No. The deal covers 2019 to 2023 with a club option for 2024. Wow. He gets essentially the same deal that Sale got from the Red Sox, even though it's a year further from free agency.
Even better for him, because to me, Chris Sale is a tier above Jake DeGrom. That's what I like to call him.
Will earn $107 million between now and the opt-out. Sale will earn $105. I say it all the time. Like, that's why I don't understand Kyler Murray. I don't understand the decision to play football. If you're even marginally good at your job in baseball, there is truckloads of stupid money waiting for you. There will be a team. We had two guys sign $300+ million contracts, and then followed by that by a guy signing $400. It's just in the last 2 weeks, and we got pitchers who are signing $130, $140 million deals. That's all guaranteed money. Kyler Murray could go out there and get one concussion, and the team is like, see you later. You're cut.
So you're telling me in Major League Baseball right now there are three players, just three players, that are worth over $1 billion.
Yes. Yes. That's what the market tells you. This whole narrative that baseball is dying and it's no longer the America's game, I don't buy that. It may not have the ratings, television ratings.
It may not be America's pastime necessarily anymore, but...
Where people get it twisted. Baseball used to dominate the national headlines. It was the national game. It's now become more regional, where you go to those stadiums. I go anytime I go to a new city for a conference or something like that, I go try to check out a baseball game. I never see empty seats. Okay, I just don't.
You haven't been to a Miami Marlins game.
I said corrected. I have not been to a Miami Marlins game. I have been to a New Orleans Baby Cakes game, though.
I have as well.
The minor league affiliate for the Miami Marlins. But
one last ride.
They look, there's just stupid money. They got all the regional broadcasting rights. They still get people coming through the turnstiles. That's why I don't understand Kyler Murray. You have guaranteed money on the table. You get to that first contract in baseball, you're set for life, man. You're set for life. Why would I rather play a game where I could have 265-pound Terrell Suggs drill me into the ground like the Undertaker, or I could play baseball?
Right. And Perksy said the newest mock drafts out, one of them's got Kyler Murray going number one overall, though.
Oh.
That's some guaranteed money. It's not $100 million guaranteed, but it's guaranteed money.
Would you want to go play for the Arizona Cardinals?
I would not. I do, though, would like to look and see how many players in the NFL I would have to add up to get to a billion. The answer for MLB is three. I promise you, it's more than that in the NFL.
Yes, yes. So, I don't know. Stupid money being thrown out there. Perks of the Game is up. He's going to take care of y'all with some terrific golf talk. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be up and early again from 6 to 9. We'll have Ron Higgins on from Tiger Details, and we'll have our good friend Les East from Crescent City Sports, among others, and we'll recap both Cajuns and LSU baseball as well. Y'all be safe out there today. Have a terrific day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.